Whether you're in your smart car avoiding Hummers or you're in your house avoiding the J-Dubs, there's no avoiding us, the Drew Marshall Show, live through our website and right here on Joy 1250. Well, I'm telling you, that kind of sounds like the Gaithers in the background there. Tim, do we...
It's right. Right, Cooter.
Oh, it's right. Oh, that's all right, then.
Yeah.
I thought you'd...
Give me nasty looks,
my friend.
I thought
you'd jump ship on me
there. No way.
Brought in the Gaithers. One thing I've never understood about the Gaither concerts, who usually goes to the Gaither concerts? Those who are 65 and older, right?
Yeah.
And they're 4 hours long. Well, covering the religion beat for the L.A. Times, William Lobdell believed God had answered his prayers. As a Christian, he wanted to report objectively and respectfully about how belief shapes people's lives, but something very different happened. Slowly, his reporting drifted to the paradoxes of religion. How can Mormons believe their own scripture? How can Christians? Why do so many churches become corrupt? Why does faith drive people to refuse to accept criticism or questions and even to demonize apostates? Each story chipped away at his faith. 8 years later, after intense encounters with believers of all sizes and shapes, he realized that his faith in God was gone. Losing My Religion is the book he wrote. How I Lost My Faith, Reporting on Religion in America. It really takes readers on quite a profound journey from agnosticism to a born-again conversion and ultimately to a new and apparently deeply satisfying form of contentment without God. Very, very courageous memoir, and joining us today on the phone is the one and only William Lobdell. Good to chat with you again. It's been too long, Bill. Way too long.
Thanks, Drew. That was a great summary.
Yeah, well, thanks. All the best. We'll talk to you again. I loved your book, and I don't love too many books. I think the last book I raved on about was a book called The Shack. Have you had a chance to
read? I have read that, yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that, and I especially enjoyed it because Paul, the guy who wrote it, William P. Young, Paul he's a humble cat.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, here's what I wrote about your book. This book is a damning indictment against those who have committed some of the most heinous crimes against the innocent. Soul murder. The collateral damage caused by so-called untouchables within the Catholic Church and evangelical community has finally been exposed. Unfortunately, in their narcissistic path of destruction is the soul of a man I deeply admire, William Lobdell. As a follower of Christ myself, I wept reading both Bill's accounts of the spiritual atrocities covered on the beat and at the pain of a man who genuinely sought after the Almighty. His authentic vulnerability is absolutely astounding.
Wow.
That's pretty good, eh?
Wow, can you send that to my mom?
Speaking of your mom, are there relatives in your family that are Jesus people who kind of freaked out over this? Or do you not have any Jesus people in your family?
No, I'm surrounded by Jesus people.
Oh, yeah, you're in Orange County. Everyone's there.
Yeah, my mom, you know, it's a real paradox for her because she's very proud of the book, but she's troubled that that I lost my faith, which she has a very strong faith. I had one caring relative after I kind of came out of the closet, he said that the reason why my 16-year-old son just got diabetes is because I lifted God's protection from our house, allowed Satan in. But that's sort of a rarity. People have been good, and I've kept almost all of my Christian friends. There's been a couple that have fallen by the wayside. But
I wonder how Paul Crouch feels about you chucking your faith.
I kind of know. He thinks I never had any faith to begin with, and I was working for Satan.
Ah. In fact, your stories were used as fundraising tools by TBN.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the more depressing things, is that I uncovered a lot of stuff that was going inside that ministry, including a $425,000 payout by Paul Crouch to keep quiet allegations of a homosexual affair, which he denies.
That was up in the cabin, wasn't it?
Yeah, on the Lake Arrowhead. The weekend at Lake Arrowhead, allegedly. But he went ahead and paid $425,000, so I uncovered that. And I thought, you know, here's a network that really goes to town on, you know, practicing homosexuality, et cetera. And I thought, wow, that's going to be the end of his public ministry. And instead, it was used as a fundraising tool. They tell the viewers that whenever they're getting really close to some great breakthroughs, then Satan comes along in the form of, in this case, form of me. And to combat that, they've got to send money in right now. And so Paul Crouch Jr. told me that to keep the stories coming, because every time I write something, it gives them a nice boost.
Isn't that special? As the church lady might say. Well, here's a little blurb I saw someone had written about you. Feeling he had messed up his life by his late 20s, Lovdell came to faith after a good friend told him, "You need God." He began a gradual but sincere spiritual search at an evangelical megachurch. Is that a name? Have you named that church?
Yeah, Mariners Church.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, Mariners. Yeah. Moved eventually to a more intellectual Presbyterian community. And finally took catechism classes to join the Catholic Church, in which your wife had grown up in. You know, I know there's a broadcaster in the Toronto area, Michael Corn, who became one of these evangelical folks, and then he bailed on it and became a Catholic. His wife was a Catholic. And I wonder, you know, why Catholicism? Was that the right move for you? I mean, hindsight would say, well, any direction towards God may not have been, you know, the right move, or was it just all part of the journey? You know, if you had somehow found a more, I don't know, more tasty morsels in the evangelical scene, would you have grown up more spiritually healthy? You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know.
I think that you don't know, but I think if I got my proper theological feeding in the megachurch arena, I probably would have come to the same conclusion. But I think what I went through because of reporting on religion, also because I headed into the Catholic Church, it happened at warp speed. So I feel like for me, I found what fits well and is the truth. I wish I had my faith. I'm sad that I lost it, but it feels like this is the right thing. So I hope I would have come to the same conclusion, but I may have taken decades instead of years.
Okay. You know what I want to do? I've never done this with an author before, but because I pored over your book, Tim is in front of me, and he sees all the highlighting marks I've got in your book, and I've got about 32 pages dog-eared. I want to go through some of the stuff I highlighted in your book and just try to paint a bit of a picture. It might be a bit discombobulated, but a bit of a picture as to what this book is really all about and therefore what your journey is about. So if you don't mind.
Yeah, sounds good.
I had fused together the image of God and my father. To me, the Lord acted like my dad, quick to anger, capricious in his wrath, willing to withdraw his love, and never satisfied. So I guess the follow-up question is, not a great relationship with your dad, maybe that screwed up your God journey?
I think it confused it for a while, and I think that's why I found I was writing that as a kid, and that's why I found the evangelical God to be so refreshing, because it was so much different than the God that I thought of growing up.
Right. How are you and Dad these days?
We're fine. He turned into sort of a mellow old man. He actually died this summer.
Oh, Bill, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that.
But he read the book before it got printed. I needed to get that his okay on it, and he was fine with it. He said he wished things were a little different, but he did the best he could. And so one of his strengths was he's able to change as he got older, and he turned out to be quite the good granddad for his grandkids.
Isn't that the way? You keep saying to your kids, look, Grandpa is not the same man I grew up with, okay? Let's just be clear about this.
They cannot fathom it. They're like, he did what? I'm like, oh, he would do this. I'm like, Papa?
I think Cosby does a whole routine on that.
I think, check it out.
For my first year as a churchgoer, I arrived 20 minutes late in order to avoid all of the emotional stuff. You're not a touchy-feely, kumbaya kind of guy?
Negative. I was kind of horrified by that handshakes and hugs and, you know, arms in the air, and I was like, what the heck is going on here? So I came late and got the message. But I slowly got sucked into it. I gotta say, it was actually very pleasant.
Did you turn into a hugger?
Yeah, you know, at some point you got to let down your guard, and you said, okay, well, you know, it's not going to kill me. And but, you know, not a tight hug.
True. No.
Sort of
maybe a shoulder hug, even.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Christianity, if false, is of no importance, and if true, of infinite importance. The only thing it cannot be is moderately important. Of course, that's a great C.S. Lewis quote.
Right.
God in the Dock. That's in your book, and of course, I would say to you then, I think I've heard you say you're a reluctant atheist or reluctant
right.
agnostic or something, some kind of title that means, you know, you're not a bitter, you know, arrogant, Hitchens kind of screw you, God people kind of guy.
Right. Not yet.
I did notice that he gave a nice glowing endorsement on the back of
your
book.
He did, yeah,
there. If that really is the case, and you've rejected Christianity or chucked it or whatever, the, I don't know, whatever term you want to use there,
right.
then it's nothing anymore. It's of no importance to
not
you.
To me, no. No. And let's go back to what you said, rejected it. I don't think I rejected it. I think that...
I knew that'd be a trigger word for you. I'm sorry.
I think that I used to think that people rejected it or accepted it, but I think feelings are much more complex than that. And so when you have someone like me who has tried, you know, for 4 or 5 years to not lose their faith, and it wasn't a choice to lose it. It's just something that happened.
I happen to know all of the stuff that you reported, you investigated. As a matter of fact, it drove me insane when you had that big stack of documents on your desk. Somebody had given you about the Catholic Church, cover-up stuff.
Right.
And you, dude, you just sat on it.
Yeah, my worst, that was one of the most painful, I have some painful revelations in that book, but that was among the most painful.
Wow. That'd be akin to me having that dream where you walk into an exam and you realize you don't know any of the questions. You forgot this. You studied the wrong stuff, you know?
Yeah. It was, I don't have any excuses. I had a great story sitting on my desk and sat there for months until I finally discovered that it was an incredible story.
Yeah. All right, so let's bring others up to speed. Here are the things that you got stuck into, the great Catholic cover-up, the sex abuse scandal, including Father Hollywood. That might have been the biggest one, at least how it affected you. Then there would be the evangelical sort of money grubbers who are, you know, I don't know, just immoral and greedy.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Covered Mormons that if someone decides to leave the faith, they're ostracized from family, friends, schools, businesses, and what damage that does to them. I covered a couple stories on the fellow radio guy, Hank Handragraff, and the Bible Answer Man, who took a lot of donor money and used it on golf club memberships and other things. A lot of sexual scandal, you know, with pastors and whatnot. The thing that was one of the most troubling things, and I did this story when I was losing my faith, and I was trying to, I specifically did the story because I wanted to shore up my faith, to show how moral behavior of evangelical Christians is superior to that of atheists. And in fact, shockingly, sadly, the behavior is just about the same.
Man.
And that's by an evangelical pollster, George Barna. It's not church-hating person.
Sure. And like me, maybe, for example. All right, I got to read something to you here out of your book. Again, we're kind of going quote by quote, highlight by highlight. I've pored over your book for a good chunk of time. Let me read this to you. As I wrote about the clergy sexual abuse scandal during the day and went to church at night and on weekends, I had no idea that I placed my Christian beliefs in mortal danger. I believed in Jesus and the church. The institution may be rotten, perhaps, but its purpose was pure. One evening, Father Vincent addressed the scandal head-on. I think we're talking about Father Hollywood there, are we not?
No, the scandal as a whole.
Oh, the scandal as a whole, okay. Yeah. He warned us Catholics to be, not to be poisoned by a relatively few bad clerics. He said the priests who molested children could be rightfully convicted of committing spiritual murder on their victims. But Father Vincent warned, if we let their actions kill our faith, that would be spiritual suicide. Did that stuff wreck you? Because I've heard two kind of contradictory statements, and I need some clarity in my own head. Sometimes you say, no, I can't blame it on that.
Right.
And other times in your book you say, yeah, I do wonder if this really was sort of the beginning of a spiritual suicide for me, investigating this stuff.
Right. I think that the scandals that I reported on, I think it allowed a lot of doubts to seep in, and it caused me to go on a journey to try to, as I said before, to shore up my faith. I was trying prayer, I was trying, double down on my Bible study, et cetera, but also to see, is there some empirical evidence that points towards, you can't prove faith, obviously, but that points towards Christianity is true. And from, prayers, no scientific evidence that prayers are answered to, really going through the Bible with, I used to go through the Bible with a Christian apologetic book with me so they could shore up any doubts. I did sort of the opposite, go through the Bible with a critic book there. And to tell you the truth, the critic's arguments made more sense than the apologetics.
Folks, we're on the line with William Lobdell. He is the former religion reporter, the guy who was on the beat, the religion beat for the LA Times, and he's written this, I would say, a mandatory read for anybody who wonders what they've bought into when it comes to the Jesus culture here in North America. I am not afraid of people reading this book and then going, oh, I can't believe in Jesus either. Because you're not a vindictive jerk in this book. I don't sense bitterness at all, Bill.
No, there's sadness, and it's kind of funny, Drew, because the biggest places I'm getting booked are churches, pastors who say, I got to have my congregation hear this. They got to see, A, what's wrong with the church, and B, let's address doubts up front. And my best reviews have been, I've gotten really good reviews all around, but my best reviews have been from Christian leaders.
Right. Has Rick Warren reached out to you? I asked that last time, and you said there was some communication.
Yeah, I exchange emails with him here and there, but... he's a busy guy, so it's not anything extensive.
Here's another quote. For someone with a faith as deep as mine, it would take more than corruption within the Catholic Church to turn me away from the Lord. That's kind of interesting. It goes to what we were saying before, really.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't worried. That's when I started to cover these scandals. I wasn't worried about it, naively, but wasn't worried about it affecting my faith because I thought, my faith is so true and so deep. I went full on into it because I just didn't think. I thought it was my calling to kind of expose the corruption within the body of Christ, and I wasn't worried about any consequences.
Okay, this is a bit of a lengthy read, but if folks, just bear with me again. William Lobdell on the phone, Losing My Religion is the book he's written, How I Lost My Faith, Reporting on Religion in America. And I had a lot of highlight marks, and I think I ran out of ink on this one. Without God, I had a whole new set of problems. There was no almighty supernatural power that had my back. I didn't have the comfort of a church home where the music, the sermons, and the fellowship could inspire me. More significantly, I had to accept the fact that there was no perfect father out there, ready to sweep me up into his arms and love me no matter what I did. In many ways, I had to accept the fact that I was alone in this world. I didn't want to join up with atheists who could be as arrogant and cocksure of their beliefs as fundamentalist Christians. And the inclusive Unitarian Church, which had Christians, Jews, Buddhists, agnostics, atheists, and others inside its big tent, was to me like drinking non-alcoholic beer. What was the point? Well said, by the way. My new disbelief affected smaller parts of my life as well. I suddenly felt awkward when I heard about someone who had been laid off, fallen ill, or experienced a death in the family. It didn't feel right to use the comforting, "you're in my thoughts and prayers," as I'd done for years. Even the simpler, "you're in my thoughts," sounded a little empty. I felt helpless and even negligent that I couldn't pray for a divine intervention, despite knowing that prayer didn't work. I settled on sending positive thoughts their way. Now I know that the best thing to do is to offer help. Hey, there's an idea. And the next best is simply to make contact. Human intervention isn't miraculous, but I think it beats silent prayer. My biggest challenge was death. Never the most comfortable subject, it now terrified me. I no longer believed in an eternal life in heaven. Jesus said that he would prepare a room especially for me in his Father's house, and I always imagined that room as a little kid, how that room might look, filled with my favorite things, including my best friends, favorite foods, widescreen TV, an endless supply of great sports events and movies, a swimming pool, workout equipment, and easy access to the beach and waves. At some level, I assumed the truth about heaven was more sublime. Example, spent time with the Lord. But the Heavenly Funhouse was the symbolic shorthand that I had often used, and now, without the Bible as my guide, my afterlife was an abyss. Assuming, that is, I didn't end up in hell because I rejected God. Now you understand why I had to read that whole thing. I mean, that's...
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Who wrote that? Oh, that's... So death scares the hell out of you now?
It doesn't now. I mean, it's not. I'm not like, you know, looking forward to it. But you know, I come to that. That was when I first was just coming to grips with, you know, oh my God, what if I'm an atheist? You know, now I think when you go, I just think it's like you're going to be like you. It's going to be like before you're born. I just think it. You know, it ends and there's no going to be no consciousness and there's nothing to be scared about. You know, what it's done for me is it's really put this life into intense focus. You know, every day I've got to live it very fully because I don't have that eternity to fall back on.
Here's another one. My piece did receive criticism. This is the original article that came out in the LA Times about you walking away from your faith.
Right.
The most consistent being that I had witnessed the sinfulness of man and mistakenly mixed that up with a perfect God. I understand the argument, but I don't buy it. If the Lord were real, it would make sense for the people of God, on average, to be superior morally and ethically to the rest of society. Statistically, they aren't. For example, same divorce rate. I threw that in. I also believe that God's institutions, on average, should function on a higher moral plane than governments or corporations. Well, I don't see any evidence of this. It's hard to believe in God when it's impossible to tell the difference between his people and atheists. You know what? I don't have follow-up questions. I'm reading these things. No, I'm reading these things going, wow, like, you're saying what I'm thinking. You're saying what
right.
I'm thinking. And I hope I'm not following your journey.
Well, I don't, you know, it's, I always think that, you know, since this book came out in my original essay, I've got a mountain of materials from people who think, you know, a single scripture is gonna reconvert me, or this workbook, or this tape, or this CD. And I always tell them, you know what would be a great thing to do is follow St. Francis of Assisi, and when he said, preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words. And
yeah.
I think the body of Christ would be much better off if they just acted out the gospel instead of what they're doing now.
You know, I've got a gentleman in the studio here who's joining us for our next segment. We're actually going to be chatting with Dr. Francis Beckwith, who's the author of Return to Rome. He dumped the evangelical stuff and became a Catholic, whereas you dumped the Catholic and became an atheist. And I want to introduce him. Jim, this is Bill. Bill, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bill. I just saw your book for the first time today. So I'm going to get it. Maybe Drew will give me his brand new copy.
I do not want to give him.
Don't do that, Drew. I need a sale.
No.
Oh, I see.
I would never do such a thing.
Drew, I'll give you $2 for his book.
Nice. Jim, by the way, is give him all your titles so he knows
who you
are.
I'm a professor at Tyndale Seminary in Toronto, which is sort of the Fuller Seminary of Canada.
Right.
And I'm associate director of the Institute for the Study of American Religion in Santa Barbara. You probably know my friend and colleague, Gordon Melton.
I don't know him.
What, you think just because he lives in California?
No, it's because Gordon's written some of the most resourceful books in religion. He's written 50 books, the Encyclopedia of American Religions. He's probably one of the most quoted experts on religion. So I work with him.
Okay, all right. So, Jim, have you come across many of these similar or type of stories where people have just said, forget it, I'm out of here, aside from the infamous Charles Templeton stuff, which, I think you and Bill, you and I talked about his book, and I just found that a bit, a bit weak.
Right.
I would say, you know, there's quite a few conversions either way, although I think more people become Christians than become Christians, get well known, and leave.
Right.
But there's, you know... There's several.
So what would you say to Bill? I mean,
Bill, let me, since I haven't read your book yet, can you give me one line answer? Why do you no longer think that Christianity is true?
It's not a thought. It's just a feeling that I have. I can give you reasons why I think I feel that way, but it's, basically I just don't believe anymore. I don't believe that, I don't believe it's evidenced anywhere, when you compare it to other groups, I think Christians are no different, and I think their organizations are no different, in some cases worse, than secular institutions.
Oh, right.
And the Catholic Church, I know you went to the Catholic Church, but I have never seen within that hierarchy more corruption than any institution I've ever seen, besides Nazi Germany or something.
Like right.
You realize what you just said, right?
I said besides Nazi
Germany. Okay.
Well, I could think of some groups that I think are worse that are religious groups, but I'm scared to name them because they often sue the pants off you, and I like wearing pants. So,
how do you spell Scientology? Oh, sorry, was that out loud?
I can't hear you, Drew. You'll have to speak softer.
Yes.
Well, that particular group didn't put that literally 1,000 kids in harm's way of molesting
right.
pedophiles. But go ahead.
Okay, yeah. Well,
I don't want to argue with
that. Let's take the Catholic story. It's a disgusting one. But here's my question. It would be, there's nothing in the New Testament that says anything like the people who claim to follow Jesus are always going to be great people. You would actually expect that not to be true. So whenever I find out that some professing Christian turns out to be a hypocrite, there's nothing.
It's not a shock factor for you.
No, because the heart is deceitful and desperately wicked.
But Bill, you didn't bail on Christianity because Christians were jerks.
No, but it also says you're going to be made new in Christ, and you would think overall, let's say, just if you take the entire population of Christians, you would think that their behavior, if it was really true, and if they were new in Christ, their behavior would be different.
Well, Bill, I wonder if you haven't been fooled by the fact that you tend to focus on the dark side. I think there's a billion Christians,
right?
Millions and millions of Christians who are wonderful, dedicated people. I've spent 30 years as a professor in theology and my entire life in the church. Yes, there have been jerks, but overall, I think
it weighs the other way.
Easily.
Well, but what I'm saying is I don't disagree with that, but I think that in the world of atheism or Buddhism or whatever, that there's that same percentage. There's just no difference.
Yes. Okay. So one thing I tell my students is you don't figure out truth by trying to prove your group is morally better, because God gave all humans conscience and the basic moral framework of all religion in terms of the non-religious dimension, just the moral, straightforward, ethical dimension, as Hans Kung has argued, is sort of the same. Don't kill, don't steal, don't lie, don't commit adultery, mm-hmm. don't be pedophiles, that sort of thing.
Just to throw that one in.
Oh, and now, I don't know if Drew asked you this. I came in probably 2 minutes.
Yeah, so, and Bill, I know this is a surprise to you, but Jim's actually, as I said before, Jim's here for the next interview, but he wanted to hear your story. He's intrigued.
Yeah, that's
because
fine.
Because Jim deals with the fringe groups of, like, the whack jobs of Christianity. He does a lot of research and investigational stuff, and then sometimes gives that investigational stuff to various television expose shows up here in Canada.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, Bill, have you told anything to Drew, or in your book do you talk about how did your view change about Jesus?
Well,
yeah, we've talked about how the Christians were jerks, but how did you throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak?
Yeah, I got it. I think that for me, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but it wasn't as though my view changed that, I had a relationship with Jesus and looked to him and prayed to him and et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, I just didn't believe in him anymore. I just thought it was, Jesus was not, he may have been, walking the earth, but I didn't view him anymore as the Son of God.
Do you know the classic trilemma from C.S. Lewis? If the Gospels are accurate, then you have three choices about Jesus. Do you know the choices?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. That's the Liar Lunatic. Who wrote that book? McDowell, right? Didn't he write that book?
Well, that trilemma is actually from the Middle Ages or earlier.
Hmm. Yeah, I've decided that I just don't think the Gospels are accurate. I think that the stories are, embellished perhaps, mm-hmm. and So I don't think I'm not sure Jesus proclaimed himself as being the son of God.
You know, the fascinating thing from my point of view, Bill, as you and I have chatted over the last year or so, once in a while, is the change in ethos or the change in your psyche, the change in your being from having lived and breathed a particular worldview and ethos and lifestyle and whatever else, to just totally going in a different direction. Like, I read the little passage there before that talked about sort of this void aspect. And I got to be honest with you, Bill, and the rest of our listeners. On my weak spiritual days, that is one of the things that keeps me buying into the Jesus program, is I'm so terrified of what's on the other side of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, yeah, you would. Yeah. Here's another thing from your book. It can be lonely having no one in the universe as your protector. I now experience this most in the smallest of ways. For instance, I recently caught a particularly nasty strain of the stomach flu, and I can totally relate to this, because I was in Scotland doing the exact same thing a few months ago. It caused me to spend hours in the bathroom, even forcing me to lie down on that cool tile floor, because I was too weak to return to my bed between bouts of vomiting. Shaking, sweating, and in tremendous stomach pain, I became scared that I was profoundly, maybe terminally ill. I found myself praying just in case I had been wrong about this whole God thing. God, if you're real, please make me better. Bill, I just did this. Exact same thing. I know I've turned away from you. I know I could be better. I know, but I could use a little help here. Please, God, I'm sorry. And the same thing happened to me, Bill. God did not reach down and touch my stomach flu.
No. My prayers went unanswered.
And my wife and I had this big dialogue the next day, where I said to her, here's another one of these sort of pseudo-cathartic moments where I sat there and cried out to God for something as so simple as, seriously, I am dying in agony here. Please stop this. And I went through all my list of repentant stuff I could go through that I could think of, and nothing happened.
Well, hey, Drew, Bill, maybe God wanted Drew to experience what you did so that you could empathize and then
you
would be open to hear about
so
Jesus, see?
What did C.S. Lewis said the pain is God's
megaphone.
Oh, yeah, by the way, I just read that part in your book sitting here in the studio. I think Lewis knew that God prefers giving us sunshine and all the good reasons to be alive, but people are deaf. You know, they don't know enough to thank God for all the good things, and we live in a world where pain sometimes wakes people up.
Sure.
I don't think Lewis was a sadist.
Right. No.
Or thought God was a sadist.
But apparently all of this, Bill, has given you a renewed sense of urgency to live this short life well.
It has, and it's also been, you know, as a Christian, I was mentally tortured, I guess, by all of the unfairness of the world and why, you know, bad things happen to good people. And I was always, just trying to figure that answer out, and the fact that we don't know God's plan and it'll be revealed to us one day. So it was just wholly unsatisfying to me. And since I've concluded that there's not a personal God that's, you know, intervening in my life, it just makes more sense. You know, when that plane in the, and the Hudson went down and was saved, it was because of great fortune and skill of the pilot, and it wasn't God, because if it was God, why would he put these people through terror and put the birds in the engines in the first place? So I don't know. It's just my life seems to make more sense.
I find myself being more grateful for each day and more quickly making corrections in my life to avoid wasted time. Man, this is profound stuff. You have no idea. Well, you probably do have an idea of what you've written. It's just absolutely. Anyway, I've tightened my circle of friends, wanting to maximize time with the people I love and enjoy the most. I've become more true to myself because I'm not as worried about what others think of me. That's a bit of an issue within Christendom, isn't it? This may be due in part to maturity. I wonder about that as well. But it also has to do with knowing what's of real importance in my one and only life. The sound of a ticking clock counting down the minutes of my life is now clearly impossible to get out of my head. This isn't a bad thing. It's the background beat to a well-lived life. I don't know if I've made this clear, folks, but this is a great, great read. If you had one thing to say to 100,000 Christians around the greater Toronto area and 100 countries listening online at drewmarshall.ca, Bill, What would you say?
God, you made me nervous. But I would, you know, I wrote the book because I think people doubt, and people aren't allowed to doubt out loud in the church culture or religious culture. And you see a Mother Teresa who for 50 years was tortured by not having the existence of God in her life and thinking she was a hypocrite and everything else. And I just want people to understand that doubt exists. You can come to different conclusions, and I think doubt is good. But let's get it out in the open.
Dr. Daniel Taylor, who wrote a book called The Myth of Certainty, certainly talks about that a lot. I've mentioned that 100 times on our show. His premise is that doubt is more compatible with faith than certainty.
Yeah, that's profound.
Jim, a final word to Bill before we say goodbye.
Bill, I would love if you would rethink whether or not...
You're scaring me, man.
Making mistake, a big mistake about Jesus. I think the greatest argument for being a Christian is thinking about the evidence for Jesus. The gospel accounts are early. It's hard to imagine they could get the story so screwed up. And if they give the accurate information about Jesus, then you have to think if he's crazy or lying or if he is who he said he is. I had an interview once with the Dalai Lama where I got a chance to ask him about that, and he said Jesus was a great teacher, and then I said, well, if he's a great teacher, he's probably teaching the truth or he wouldn't be that great. So that's a line I'd like you to think about. That actually has had a major impact on Anthony Flew, the atheist who became a deist about 5 years ago.
Right.
Bill, I am sure that you have been inundated with Christians saying, yeah, but I want you to consider this. Yeah, but have you considered this?
Right.
And you're an intelligent dude. You have considered probably all of these things, if not more. Has there been one thing that somebody has thrown out at you that has really kind of made you go, whoa, I never thought of that before?
Besides what I just
said. Besides what Jim just said, of course, yes.
Thank you. you know, there hasn't. I think that, you know, the thing that's made me stop and think the most is you know, my good Christian friends who just continue to love me and, you know, think I'm off on a kind of a kooky little tangent. But, you know, they're sitting there waiting for me no matter what I think.
So they're an example of maybe something like unconditional love. In other words, you've jumped ship, but we still love you kind of thing?
Yeah.
That has given you pause.
I mean, not great pause, but no. It's the best thing people can do.
Well, and you probably thought that you would be kicked to the curb a lot more after this.
I did think that. You know, I think that the people that are the most insecure about their faith are the ones that are most that lash out the most at me, and I need to keep that in mind. The people that are pretty rock solid in their faith are the ones that can talk with me and embrace me and, you know, not worry that I'm going to somehow taint them.
Well, aside from me saying to the Jesus people that they should get a copy of this book and read it, because I'm not as scared of what, you know, whether God is going to freak out over this or not. Is there such a word as a scared, by the way? I don't think there is. There are more important and smarter and deeper theological people than I who have also signed off in your book. Isn't there somebody from Christianity Today that said this is a good read?
Yeah, he's the chairman of Christianity Today. And also, you mentioned Jim Henson Fuller Seminary in Southern California. They've made it required reading for their faculty and students.
Excellent. Wow, that gives me good hope for Fuller, that's for sure. Final thing I'm going to bore you with, because you wrote it. Thanks for coming on my show and letting me read your book to you. This is called Spiritual Suicide, and you wrote this during a class of other reporters, I think.
Right, religion writers, yeah.
Religion writers, and this is what you wrote, and this is how you end your book. Way to end your book with a punch. I'm on a narrow ledge far above the ground. The toes of my bare feet are wrapped over the concrete edge. I'm not even leaning against the building anymore. I don't care anymore. After 2 years of this, jumping would bring me rest. A plunge wouldn't drop me onto unforgiving pavement far below. It's not that kind of act. Instead, my leap would be into the warm, inviting pool of unbelief. I imagine the water would engulf me like a kind of reverse baptism. It would wash away all the doubts I've had about God. Once I step off this ledge of faith, the answer to tough questions such as why good people suffer becomes easy. A loving God doesn't let it happen because he doesn't exist. I'm seeing my spiritual life atrophy into skin and bones. God help me. You are a very good writer, Bill.
Thanks, Drew.
Highly recommend this book to everybody. And you want to throw up maybe a website for people to hunker down into? I've said that phrase about, 19 times today.
Yeah,
Bill?
You could do www.WilliamLobdell, L-O-B as in boy, D as in dog, E-L-L. That's my official website.
Thanks for sharing your guts with us.
All right. Thanks, Drew. I appreciate it. Very nice interview.
We'll talk again, I hope.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bill Lobdell on the Drew Marshall Show. When we come back from our short break, Jim Beverly joins us in studio with Dr. Francis Beckwith. He used to be the big kahuna there at the Evangelical Theological Society, and then he bailed on the evangelicals. Is it evangelical or evangelical, Jim? Do you know the difference?
I'd say either way is fine.
Okay, that'll work. And became a Catholic guy. We know a few people have done this, and of course the evangelical community says, "Really? Why would you do that?" And the Catholics say, "It's about time." So we'll be back with Dr. Francis J. Beckwith and Dr. Jim Beverly here on the Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.